Broadcasting from the confines of an abandoned radio station in the secluded ghost town of High Strangeness, it's just outside of Area 51, and it's time for full disclosures of the topics they told us were off limits. Hello there, I'm Connie Willis. This is Coast to Coast AM, broadcasting from the KOA News Radio studios of iHeartMedia in Denver, Colorado, home of, well, the Mile High City, 58 14ers. Wow. If you're not sure what a 14er is, like I just kind of learned, check it out. Look it up. It's really cool. And also the largest airport in the U.S. in Denver. Tonight, Dave the Mystic and also Ray the Sorcerer for Hire. We're going to get started soon, and it's going to be exciting as I enjoy some leftover Halloween candy. Time now to turn off the lights and join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much-needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks among us and what is beyond. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Hello there, everybody. I'm Connie Willis. Tonight, don't forget, you're going to be changing your clocks back 1 hour. And it was a year ago today. I said it the other way around. So don't listen to me. Change clocks back 1 hour. So that means you're going to get a little extra Coast to Coast later as well. All right. Can't beat that, right? Well, my name's Connie Willis. You know me from here, getting to visit here 5-6 years now. And also BlueRockTalk.com or BlueRockTalk.tv. It's Earth's Most Interesting Conversations. It's really fun. I have shows called Far Out Thursday, Bigfoot Friday, and our latest show, On the Road with Connie Project, taking you to the most active creepy hotspots virtually, and that's via live chat and live stream. So you too can become a Blue Rocker, that is someone in the know, by being very interactive and participatory with BlueRockTalk.com, BlueRockTalk.tv. I hope that you'll join us. In fact, the next On the Road, we just did a haunted graveyard. And we just did a show with Bobo from Finding Bigfoot before that. But the next one is going to be at Waverly Hills. You guys know that sanatorium, what, the number one biggest, gigantic, most haunted building on the planet? Yep, we'll be there this next month. So I hope you'll join us beforehand. We'll be doing it right after their Christmas laser shows, but we'll be investigating Waverly. I'm really looking forward to that. That place is huge. And it's in Louisville, Kentucky. I grew up next to it and never even knew about it. Now I travel far and wide to get there to do some fun shows. So we'll do that on the next On the Road with Connie. So I hope you'll join us and join the membership of BlueRockTalk.tv. Head over there and sign up. Don't forget to change your clocks. Just want to remind you again, I don't want to mess up on that one this year. So our first guest, we got two of them tonight. Ray, the Sorcerer for Hire, will be with us later. But right now we have Dave the Mystic. Now, this is interesting about Dave. He's an honest-to-goodness, the real deal rocket scientist, okay? He's a rocket scientist, but he's also Dave the Mystic. That doesn't work, does it? Well, you're right about that. He's got an incredible background, intense. I'll let him tell you more about that because it's such a difference of mind. And I'm excited into the fact that he is in the Colorado area. So because of that, he's inside the state. I'm going to take him Bigfooting one day, and I want him to tell me, as an engineer, how this happens and what he sees. But the thing is, he can do it. He's open to it. He's open to it. So let's bring on Dave the Mystic. Dave, welcome to Coast AM.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me.
It's nice for you to be here. I think this is the first time ever, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, I hope you enjoy tonight. I'm looking forward to it here. So,
Dave,
and he has a great sense of humor as well. So, Dave, because you have such an extensive background, I didn't want to screw it up. You have so many unbelievable credits with being an aerospace engineer. So, rocket scientist, as I know, living down there by Cape Canaveral at one point. So, tell me your background and your education.
Well, I discovered as a fifth grader that I wanted to become an electrical engineer, and I really marched forward on that. So I got my bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from Kansas State University, and I got my master's in with a focus in bioengineering, so I picked up the biology side with anatomy and physiology besides the electrical engineering for my master's. I worked at General Motors for a couple years in Michigan and then decided I wanted to try something else, so I went back to Wichita where I grew up and worked at Boeing for a couple years on the aerospace side, and I decided I wanted to try something else other than Boeing. So I ended up hiring into Martin Marietta out here in Denver, which is now Lockheed, back in 1981, and I focused on spacecraft, rockets, telemetry systems for rockets, satellites, microsatellites. I have 6 patents on micro and nano satellites. So I'm very experienced in that area, but other things happen that led me down the path to looking at the other side. I also picked up a degree in psychology and a degree, a master's in computer science along the way, too.
Well, I'm happy that you did make the switch, because I've talked to so many people with that mindset of engineering, of the laws of the universe, the laws of science, this is the way it is, and there's nothing else. And there are so many people out there on that side. You know, it's all fine and dandy, but when I've talked to those people and they're not open at all to discussing things that I've experienced myself, much less everybody else that is a part of Coast to Coast, and I just can't believe the reaction some of those people give. And they don't even want to talk to you anymore. They think you're a total nut. So you know the other side. I'm interested in how, I'm interested how you can explain that and what we might even say to those people that think the other way, if there's something we can ever say to them before they hang up the phone or push us away.
Well, one of the interesting things, people need to understand, scientists do basic science in general, and they come up with new principles. Engineers take those principles and they make something practical out of it to hopefully help people, help humanity. So, you know, a physicist may come up with some exotic theory in thermodynamics, but an engineer is the one who makes the car engine. So that makes it more practical for people.
Right.
Engineers make lots of simplifying assumptions because the basic physics of many things are just too complex. So, for example, electrical engineers frequently use something called Ohm's Law. And this sort of led me down the path of being a little bit disenchanted with where we're going. Now, I'll explain why. So Ohm's Law says that in a basic circuit with a battery and a resistor, that voltage equals current times resistance. This equation holds true to as many significant decimal points as you can measure it accurately. Nobody's ever found an exception to it. It just is rock solid. But here's the problem for me, and this is what started happening to me in the early 80s before I really started jumping over to the other side. Ohm's Law doesn't tell you what an electron is. It tells you what a group of electrons do as a gross effect, but in terms of what an electron is, it has no explanatory value. So electrical engineers all the time use Ohm's Law, but the average electrical engineer cannot tell you what an electron is, even into the detail that people in quantum mechanics or quantum physics would be able to describe that. And that's true of most of the engineering, is we use math equations in their models. They have explanatory value, they have validity, they have significance, they help us design bridges, they help us get airplanes to fly, they help us get rockets into space. But they don't go back to what do atoms do, what do electrons do. They just don't go that level. And at that point in my life, I was ready for something deeper and more detailed. And so I also started learning some of the basic principles in quantum mechanics, which we can talk about, that do actually open the door, whether or not physicists and engineers like it, to the idea that we can have telepathic communication, we can have a universe where anything that anybody does anywhere is accessible to somebody else who is sensitive or discerning, that these are acceptable, they're permissible, they're almost somewhat predicted by quantum mechanics.
And so why is it that they can't just look at that and know when someone says, hey, I've seen this, or I've done this, or I can tell what you just, you know, what your last thought was? Why do they just blow that off? Is it because they can't get past those equations and that 2 + 2 = 4 kind of thing? What is it that holds them back from jumping over that and saying, wow, there must be something else because you did that?
Yeah. Well, let's look at a guy who's kind of controversial, the Amazing Randy. And Amazing Randy leaves a team of debunkers called the Skeptical Inquirers, and there's a magazine that supports that. And he supposedly has a $10,000 check in his pocket that if you show up and you demonstrate something that they can't explain using magical tricks, or they can't explain with other things, then he'll give you the check. And supposedly he's never given the check away. You know. But here's the problem with what he does is, and I think this is so fundamental that I'm happy to explain it here. Life sciences aren't exact. And I'll give you an example. If we have a poison that we give to mice, we can talk about LD50. LD means lethal dose for 50% of the mice. But I can't point out which mice are going to die with that dosage, because these are living things. Living things have a tremendous amount of variability. So when you talk about ESP, psychic skills, intuitive gifts, all these types of things, and they say, well, if you're going to come into my lab, you're going to do it every time we ask you to, you're going to do it in every form we ask you to, and you're going to do it 100% of the time. Life sciences don't work that way. Drugs don't work that way. Nothing that people do is on and off. A very easy example is, let's pretend I'm naive and I come into town and somebody explains this new game called baseball to me, and they talk about a home run and they explain what a home run is. I think, well, that's amazing. I'm going to go down to the baseball park and I'm going to watch a game. And I go to the park, nobody hits a home run. And by their criteria, like the Amazing Randy, I would conclude that it is impossible to hit a home run because I never saw it once, much less everybody being able to do it. And that's kind of the black and white criteria they use, which to me is very inappropriate for something that's based on organic things, biological things, which nothing is 100%. You know, three different people can fall down the stairs. One breaks their neck, one breaks a leg, and one walks away unharmed. And we can't predict which one is which. So why would we place this hard science criteria like an electrical circuit onto people performing in different ways? It's just it's an inappropriate use of scientific criteria from one area of what we would call hard science over to the life sciences.
Love hearing this stuff. Absolutely love hearing this stuff. I had talked with, this was a while back, it was Robert Bigelow's secondhand man, Colm Keller, who worked with George Knapp over at the Skinwalker Ranch. And I talked to him at one point and said, you know, asked him about Skinwalker, and I was going to have him on Coast at one point. And I had said, how do you explain this stuff that's going on? Because, you know, he's real scientist kind of guy too, right? And they're building all that space stuff. And he said, Connie, there's a different science that you will see one day, and it will have the measurements of the things that you talk about and we've seen on Skinwalker Ranch. He said, right now, we just don't have a way to measure those things. Mm-hmm. And found that pretty interesting.
Well, there's a lot of devices. If you go back to Edison, he was working on some type of radio to talk to people in spirit. And there have been people since then who've come up with devices that supposedly give communication with entities and allows them to communicate in text on them. So people are trying to bridge that gap. If we look at the idea that somebody dies, they're just changing their vibrational level, and for whatever reason, we're blocked from seeing them in that vibrational level, it's not hard to conceive that we may be able to crack that and come up with either devices or techniques that would enhance our capability to communicate with these spiritual beings that still have a consciousness. So I see that coming. It may come very soon.
Yeah, and it's going to be from people like you that know the other side of the science and now know this side. And you've been doing this side for quite a while, a lot of alternative healing and some healing I've never heard of, like the Yun method. I've never heard of that. I don't even know if I said it right, but the Akashic record reading, things like that, the karma burning, soul retrieval, these are things I've heard. And I've gotten to talk to you a little bit along the way, but these things to be described is just amazing to hear, and you're really good at doing that. So I know that at one point somebody in radio, of course, somebody in radio, a cool radio personality, helped you at one point see some things, and well, you tell the story.
Yeah, so I was open to the idea of psychic phenomena growing up. My mom discovered astrology when I was in sixth grade. My parents had recently divorced, and my dad was both an engineer and an Episcopal priest, so I kind of already had feet in two different worlds there by inheritance. But my mom became interested in astrology, and going through junior high and high school, I was kind of her guinea pig for trying out these things, things like Ouija board, table tipping, predicting card sequences when you turn the cards over, things like that. And so I stayed open to it, but I didn't really pursue it. So I went to college, and then eventually I ended up, as I said before, out here in Denver. And in 1983, I went back to Wichita for my 10th high school reunion. And I ran into an old friend there, and we exchanged pleasantries, and he asked if I had become an electrical engineer like I had planned. I said, sure. And he said, well, Dave, do you think it's possible to change things at a distance? And he kind of kept asking obtuse questions like this, and he wouldn't come out with it and tell me what was really on his mind. So finally he said, look, come over to my house after this picnic. I want to show you some things. So I went over to his house and rode over with him, and we first got out of the car, and he walked me over to the electric meter on his house. And he looked at it and he said, do you have an idea of the rate of the wheel? Electric mirrors have a little wheel that spins, and the more electricity you're using, the faster they spin. And I said, sure, I can see the rate of that wheel. And he points to it with his index finger and says, now. And it slowed by a third right then, no hesitation. And then he said something to me like, I did this to my mother's house several months ago, and her bills are still lower. Wow, okay, you've got my attention. This is interesting. And keep in mind, I'm an electrical engineer, so I could detect trickery or fakery on this stuff. We go inside, and he has a small black and white TV with rabbit ears, and he puts it on a snow channel for Wichita. And so I'm just looking at static on a screen. He points at it and says, now. And he tunes in a station. With full clarity. I mean, it's not fuzzy, it's not iffy, it's not use your imagination. This is a fully tuned in station. Since he was a disc jockey at that time at an FM radio station, he had a very nice stereo, and it had the volume meters on the front, where if the left channel goes up, left side, left speaker, the needle goes up, and so you can adjust your volume and your balance. So he asked me to look at the meters, and I said, sure. You know, music was playing, and when the music got louder, the needles go up. He points to the stereo, and he goes, now. And the needles go out of phase, such that when the music goes up in volume, then the needles go down. They're backwards. They're operating backwards. It gets stranger. He asked me to go outside with him. We went out and sat in his car, and he started it. And it was just idling. His hands were off the controls. His feet were off the pedals. and he sort of points at the dash and he goes, "Now." And the idle slowed down to the point where the car was stalling. And he told me that he found he could stall other cars in traffic.
Mm.
Well, this is really getting my attention. And at that point, when I'm presenting this to other people, they always start laughing because everybody would like to have that ability, I think, you know, out in traffic, especially here in Denver.
know, stall the other cars and make way stall. For yourself. Right. Hey, hey, you know what, Dave? Let's stop it right there and come back so we can take a break here. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. We're talking with Dave the Mystic. We're going to find out what else his radio friend could do with his mind alone. More interesting conversation to come here with Connie on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Connie Willis here from the 850 AM, 94.1 FM KOA, the voice of Colorado. The studios affiliated with all the over 500, 600 that enjoy Coast to Coast AM and share it with everybody. Talking with Dave the Mystic, and right before we ended, we were talking, learning about his radio buddy that was showing off some incredible skills. And the last thing that his skills were doing was stalling cars out. And Dave was getting the lessons right there inside the car. So Dave, did he actually stall them totally or did they just go down slowly? Or I mean, were they dead? Were they done?
He was able to stall the car. Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, the next fun thing we did, since we were in the car, was we drove down to the radio station where he was working at the time, and we went into the meter room where they have all the status meters on the performance of the transmitter, and there was a digital meter there that was reading 99.6, which is 99.6% of the output of the station. This was a 50,000 watt FM station, so very powerful. So he asked me if I had an idea, you know, that I was studying the meter. He said, I'm going to lower the output power of the station. And he said, I can't lower it very much or else the automatic electronics in it will trip the station off the air thinking that there's a failure. So I can't do it very much, but I want you to see this. So he asked me if I had an idea of the level. Sure, it's 99.6%. He points at the meter, and he says, now. And it drops to 99.2%. Now, 0.4 of a percent of 50,000 watts is a whole lot of power. And the thing that was really coming through on this, I've read so much on this over the years on all of this different type of metaphysics and psychic phenomena and things. I've never come across anybody else who can consistently get an effect like this, who can get big effects, things that are more than just spinning the little paper propeller underneath a water glass on a pin, things like that. People who are doing, you know, big effects like this and to do it every time, that's exceedingly rare. And what I learned out of this, and we tried other experiments over the years, but the big thing for me was I took it as a demonstration from higher powers to me as an engineer and also as a person who needed to get into this, that I needed to get on the path and find out what was going on, because electrical engineering was losing its explanatory value, or science and physics were, for what is going on in life. And so I returned from that trip back to Denver, and I got very involved in taking classes in alternative healing, including energy healing. I took courses in psychic development. I took courses in channeling of ascended masters and also in meditation. And I kind of had to do this on the side in the 1980s. It wouldn't have been especially productive for my career at Martin Marietta to also hang out a shingle that says Dave Barnett is also an energy healer and an intuitive. Probably not good for my career. So I kind of walked in both worlds and kept the two worlds very, very separate.
I think that's fabulous, though. I mean, I just love that because you don't hear that happening a lot. It's just usually two sides fighting with each other. So what are your best abilities? What are the things that you have done to help other people and that you think are maybe the most significant? And, you know, I guess, do you teach it as well?
I teach some of it. I do more mentoring one-on-one with people. I see everything that I do as sort of being generically healing. I think healing is one of the noblest things you can do. I tell people that fundamentally it can be selfish for me to help other people, because if you really realize the true connectedness that you have with other people, if you make them feel better, if you make them do better, you're going to feel better. And so all of these different gifts I have, all of these different techniques and things I use, ultimately I see them all as being healing, where healing is a very big category. It's not just physical healing. It can be emotional, spiritual, energetic, all these types of things. So I do have many different modalities of energy healing and variants that I use, whether it's hands-on healing, it's things like Reiki or healing touch or therapeutic touch. I also work with a lot of subconscious core belief work, which would encompass some of the UN method, as well as Psyche, which stands for psychology, kinesiology. That's a system for working with core beliefs that you have that can interfere with where you are in life or what you're doing. I do a lot of work with reading past lives. When I was taking some development classes in the time range of 2003 to 2007, I was in a position with my engineering where I was able to spend all the time I needed to study all of this. The past life reading came out very nicely for me. I was taken through a guided meditation and saw myself in a past life. I was led into a room where there's a great big volume, and I found that when I opened that huge volume, like a giant dictionary, it would have an image in it that pertained to the question or the situation or the person. And as I watched a picture in my meditation, I would see it turn into a video. I found that I could move it forward or backwards in time and also get the context of the people who appeared in that image. That evolved into going into the spiritual plane and visiting the Hall of Records, which, as a metaphor, looks like a big library with lots of books. And there are sections of books for each person where each volume represents a lifetime. And I started pulling those volumes out to read lives, past lives for other people. And then that evolved over time to where I just I get a download of information. It's what you can call claircognizance, an instant knowing of information, especially information that I know I'm not carrying around consciously with me. I haven't heard it before. It just flows in as I need it. So I do a lot of work with past lives. I find that from my point of view, past lives are still ongoing. They aren't over and done with and like film in a can, like yesterday's news. They're still active. And to some degree, these past lives can have situations where due to harm, injury, illness, they may reach forward to our present life here and give a person effects from that. And so I can work with people to go back to those past lifetimes, look at their situations, if there's forgiveness or release that needs to happen, understanding, work with that. So that's another one.
I know that you did that with me. We did a session. We did that where you did an energy clearing with me. And this was pretty interesting because you told me about things that I hadn't heard about along the way. And I would have said, yeah, I've heard about that. But I didn't. There were certain things that you looked for within me, anybody close to me, and also my pets. And even where I live and the area around it, because you wanted to clear out everything. I guess, as best as possible. But there were things like earthbound spirits, demons, heard those before, dark entities, of course, large and small. Mimics was different for me. You actually look for curses on me, elementals, dim beings, implants, imprints, cords, oaths against others, vows from others, portals, satanic ritual sites, I guess, with where I am, and just other entities. I had no idea about some of these things, like a mimics. I guess I have kind of heard those before, but you described it just differently. So can you describe these different ones for us? Because I just found that pretty interesting. So you had earthbound spirits.
Sure. I'd be happy to.
Okay.
I kind of stumbled into doing clearings when somebody called me on a vacation trip around 2007. And they talked about phenomena in their house. And they didn't know what to do. And they asked me if I'd be willing to take a stab at it. And I was out of town. I said, sure, I'll do some work on it. And it worked pretty good on the first pass. And then about 2 weeks later, I had to use some more sophisticated techniques. And it was a learning process for me. And that got rid of all of this stuff. A woman and her family had bought a house in a suburb of Denver. And it was a really good deal on a house, but nobody would tell them why they got a good deal. And after they moved in, they found that the previous owner was an older man, and he was very reclusive. He didn't talk to neighbors. He would actually drive into his garage and close the garage door before he got out of his car, so nobody could talk to him. And very hard life, I suppose, in some way. And he hanged himself in the basement. And it apparently was his energy still in the house. And that was a learning opportunity for me. And it also opened my eyes to the fact that I could do clearings remotely. I don't routinely now, after over 1,000 clearings, I never visit the place I'm going to clear. I don't go there. And so I'm able to clear places all over the planet. But I started out with a worksheet, being the engineer that I am also. I have a spreadsheet. And it started out with about 4 columns of what I would look for on the people or the pets or the vehicles or the house. And then over time, over the years, I've added additional categories of other things. Because when I do a clearing, I want to get the entities and their various types off the person. But I also want to remove every other type of energetic influence on the person that can pull them down or drain their energy or affect their well-being. And so the chart has close to 15 columns now of different types of things. These descriptions are on my website if you care to take a look at davethemystic.com. I normally have a worksheet posted there. I just reworked my website with somebody else, and so the worksheet will probably show up in the next couple of days. But let's talk about some of these categories. So we talk about earthbound spirits. These are people who've died, and they didn't go through the white light tube. They didn't go to the spiritual plane. They're hanging out in the astral plane, and there are several potential reasons why they do this. Some of them are addicted to something, or were addicted to something in human form, and they're afraid that if they go to the spiritual plane, they won't be able to satisfy that craving. Another issue for them is sometimes they're like Bruce Willis in the movie Sixth Sense. They don't know that there's life after death, and they hang around in the astral plane, and they're very curious. And they almost become slightly neurotic that people don't see them, notice them, or acknowledge them, and they don't know why. Another form of these people who are hanging around are those who have some type of church experience, which has led them to believe that they are sinners and they're unlikely to get through the pearly gates and they're going to be consigned to a fiery eternal hell. And so they're not willing to take the chance. So all these people are missing out on getting back into the spiritual plane and essentially being brought back up to speed on their memories, their spiritual standing and everything. So when they're walking around in the astral plane, they're pretty much as naive about spiritual matters as they were when they're alive. So they're curious. They find people with compatible energies to get into their energy field and to link up, and they kind of use us as batteries to recharge their batteries. So in general, they're not healthy to have here, and it's kind of spiritually inappropriate to keep them here or have a desire to have them be here rather than going back to the spiritual plane. So when I work on removing them, when I was originally doing this, I would go and find out their story. I would talk to them. I would ask them who they needed to show up in order to be escorted into the spiritual plane. I found that the vast majority of these people had very mundane lives, very ordinary, and there really wasn't a lot to learn from many of them. You know, some poor guy was walking down the street in the 1930s, he got hit by a truck, left for dead, and the truck drove off, and now they're just trying to find out where they're going. They have very little sense of time. So some of them might have this compulsion that they want to get a message to their wife. They don't realize that their wife died 40 years ago, and so they don't have that sense of time. So in general, I see no advantage to having earthbound spirits remain around us in the astral plane. It's holding them back spiritually, and I think that's unfair to them.
And you escort them out. Is that what is it called? Psychopomp? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, psychopomp is one of the classic old terms for escorting people. Some people use it where they would go work in a hospice center and for people who are close to passing to make sure they're safe. Another way you could describe this term is for people in Tibetan Buddhism where they follow the Tibetan Book of the Dead. You could say that the lamas who are talking to these people during the death process and also for several days after they've died, but they feel they're still around, that they're also psychopomps in terms of making sure that they keep hearing the words and following the path that takes them to safety rather than bouncing right back into a reincarnation path. So, a psychopomp is an appropriate term for somebody who escorts those who are moving into spirit to get them to the spiritual plane and not to be hung up in lower realms.
I think that's amazing. I remember reading, and I believe it was the Monroe Institute, that groups of people would get together and they would, that was what their purpose was. They'd get together to take people that needed to be crossed over.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does that ring a bell to you? Were you ever part of that?
I haven't been a part of that. I just do it routinely as part of my clearing process. So,
okay. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, that's really a good thing to do.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I'm not very keen on the idea that especially young people are going out on a lark to have fun. You know, they take a case of beer and flashlights and cameras and go out to a graveyard, you know, it's a scary, fun thing to do to hopefully see spirits. If I'm hearing that people are doing that routinely at some location, I may just go ahead and remotely, clear the whole cemetery of all the earthbound spirits there and move them on. I don't see a reason for them to be there and also to be treated as sort of a freak show or a sideshow.
Well, don't mess with Waverly Hills in the next month because we're going to do one of my shows out there on the road with Connie. So, I don't even know what you're talking about. What about, I didn't say that, right? I didn't say that. Just real quick, what about karma burning sessions? I find that pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, a number of gifts have come to me over the past 10 or 15 years. And they continue to show up in interesting ways. But so I meditate daily. I'm shown new things repeatedly in the spiritual plane. And one day I was taken by a guide. Some people may recognize the name Joel Kuhl. He shows up in Madame Blavatsky's works and also in Alice Bailey's works. He's a very easy to channel spirit. He's an ascended master, and he shows up quite a bit. So he was taking me on a path. We kind of went up some stepping stones up a hillside and ended up in what looked like a glass house, and took me aside to meet the owner or the resident there. And
we'll hear more about that when we come back. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. This is Dave the Mystic, and we'll be taking your questions as well for Dave.